got a little bone to pick with the programming department. Would it kill you every once in a while to play a little Fog Hat? He's one of the boys. He's a white boy. He used to be his father's pride till he spent a year inside. He's one of the boys. He's a white boy.
Wow. How racist. Calling somebody white like that, Fog Hat. Matter with you guys. Coming to you from the Kurt Subaru studio. Welcome to our top stories this hour. I'll update you the latest in the polling that we're getting this afternoon on Tuesday's midterms, and specifically Tiffany Smiley versus
Patty Murphy.
We'll get you the very latest on all of that. And if you weren't listening right at 12:06 today when our show began, there's a rather explosive political slash media story going on this afternoon. NBC's Today Show ran a piece this morning that contradicts the official narrative of what happened to Paul Pelosi a week ago today. Now, the question is, did the Democrat Party, did Nancy Pelosi, did they go to their very good friends at NBC News and tell them to spike the story? I got a text. Somebody said, well, spike me. Kill. You killed the story. NBC had linked up the video to the Today Show piece that ran today. And then they, shortly before I went on the air, they pulled the video. They put an editor's piece in and said, this didn't meet our standards of journalism. Or was it too honest for Pelosi and the Democrats? It's crazy. I'll update you on that coming up in just a few minutes here. But I have some new audio or more audio that I haven't played yet today. Let's get right to the big lead.
The big lead. Bizarro world.
If you had any doubt that the Democrat Party and the media work in tandem with each other, that whenever the party comes up with talking points, they give it not just to Joe Biden and Jay Inslee and Gavin Newsom, but they give the same talking points to all of their good, dear friends in the mainstream media. So they see Tuesday's midterms being a disaster. So they've had to really ramp up the hysteria. So a week ago, it was Paul Pelosi was attacked because of election denialism, which, again, is one of the stupidest little bits of political media strategy of all time. But they got Joe Biden and Jay Inslee and Gavin Newsom to say that. And they got all their allies in the media to say that. It was so obviously stupid a connection, but it doesn't matter. So then they discovered, Paul Pelosi being attacked and connecting that to January 6th, that's not turning around the midterms. Gosh, I wonder why. So in the last 36 hours, they've embarked on a new strategy. They sent it out to all their politicians, and they sent it out to all their friends in the media. And the new strategy now is, if Tuesday goes wrong for the Democrats, here is what's going to happen.
Democracy is at stake in this election, Nevada.
He made it clear that democracy is at stake this November.
Democracy is at stake this November.
Democracy is at stake.
Our democracy is at stake.
But the future of our democracy is at stake.
We all know democracy is at stake.
This is the most important election coming up because democracy is at stake.
Nothing less than the future of democracy is at stake.
How shameless are these network media people when they see a politician say something and then they realize, oh, I got to say the exact same thing. I'll use the exact same wording. Democracy is at stake. It's a phrase that's not used that often. And yet, It's the phrase that every politician on the left and every left-wing media person suddenly used in the last 36 hours. Democracy is at stake. But that's not the only thing that we are learning thanks to people in the media. MSNBC, they have a presidential historian named Michael Beschloss. And he, because the democracy is at stake, that didn't seem to be turning around Tuesday's midterms. So now they came up with another strategy. Let's amp it up to 11.
And a historian 50 years from now, if historians are allowed to write in this country, and if there are still free publishing houses and a free press, which I'm not.
Could you understand that if the Republicans take control of Congress on Tuesday, we are no longer going to have a free press. We are no longer going to have a democracy. But at least the children will be okay, right, Michael Beschloss?
In this country, and if there are still free publishing houses and a free press, which I'm not certain of, but if that is true, a historian will say what was at stake tonight and this week was the fact whether we will be a democracy in the future, whether our children will be arrested and conceivably killed.
Yeah.
We're on the edge of a brutal authoritarian system, and it could be a week away.
Now we have finally reached peak hysteria. Not only is democracy at stake on Tuesday. Wait, does this amp? It goes up to 11? Nah, watch. I'm going to take it up to 12 here. Not only is democracy at stake, but now I can't even say the words. I'll let him say them again.
The fact whether we will be a democracy in the future, whether our children will be arrested and conceivably killed, we're on the edge of a brutal authoritarian system, and it could be a week away.
So starting, I don't know if it's going to start Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, but beginning roughly 4 days from now, the children in America are going to be killed if the Republicans win on Tuesday. I'm glad that MSNBC has this presidential historian, Michael Beschloss, to put into perspective just exactly what this midterm means. Once again, okay, follow your conscience when you cast your vote. But according to MSNBC, if you choose poorly, children will be killed. That's an interesting take on things that they have. Who can I go to for a more measured analysis of this election? Let's try Joy Behar here.
No, you're not voting for Republicans. You're voting for a cult. Remember that. It's a cult.
By the way, her voice, it's like the song of a meadowlark. Or Marge Simpson. I don't know which one.
No, you're not voting for Republicans. You're voting for a cult. Remember that. It's a cult. It's not Republicans anymore.
Okay, so now. Democracy is at stake. Children will be killed. And we're going to become a cult. Sonny Hostin on The View. Can you offer us some reasonable perspective on Tuesday's midterms?
Republican suburban women are now going to vote Republican.
Why?
It's almost like roaches voting for Raid, right?
They're voting against their own self-interest.
So to sum up, democracy is at stake. Children will be killed. America will become a cult. And white suburban women are going to turn into cockroaches. Now, how can you, with a clear conscience, clear eyes, full heart, Coach Taylor, how can you, with clear eyes and full heart, vote for Tiffany Smiley or Matt Larkin or Joe Kent when you know what's at stake now. Now that I have presented to you the dystopian reality of America 5 days from now, I hope that you can live with the guilt. You can text me on all of this. 888-973 Cairo, 888-973-5476. Okay, the other fascinating story, getting very little attention in the mainstream media. This morning on the Today Show, because as you know, that when Paul Pelosi was attacked last Friday, just over a week ago, wee hours of last Friday morning, immediately people like Jay Inslee told us who was responsible for the attack on Paul Pelosi.
Tiffany Smiley, Matt Larkin, Joe Kent, mm-hmm. They're enabling this election denial, which foments this violence. When these candidates are asked point blank, was Joe Biden fairly elected, they refuse to answer. And yet, they go around allowing and enabling these doubts about the fairness of our election to spring and to grow.
Yes, Paul Pelosi was attacked because Tiffany Smiley, Matt Larkin, and Joe Kent are fomenting thought or something. And of course, Joe Biden, just like the America, democracy is at stake. That was today's memo. The memo last Friday was just that, that this is election denialism, and January 6th, that was really wielding the hammer that struck Paul Pelosi in the head. It wasn't some radical left-wing, hallucinogenic, imbibing nudist holding that hammer. It was Tiffany Smiley, Joe Kent, and Matt Larkin holding that hammer. Right, Joe Biden?
All this happened after the assault. And it just, it's hard to even say. It's hard to even say. After the assailant entered the home asking, where's Nancy? Where's Nancy? Those are the very same words used by the mob when they stormed the United States Capitol.
Okay. So let's fast forward to today and the story that has been spiked. The NBC's Today Show, the biggest cash cow on the network. It is the biggest staffed program on the network. They have lots of layers of editors, and they have a terrific reporter named Miguel Aldemar. And he had a story on the Today Show using police documents that has kind of debunked the whole Paul Pelosi, Jay Inslee, Joe Biden narrative. So this is from the Today Show this morning, and this is explosive stuff, as they explained. And again, this aired on the East Coast. I believe they killed this story before the West Coast airing of the Today Show, because it sounds like Democrat Party officials went to their friends at NBC News and said, kill the story, kill the story. It's ruining our narrative.
This morning, Paul Pelosi is home, back at the house that became a crime scene a week ago today. NBC News learning new details about the moments police arrived.
Okay, new details about when the police arrived, because we've heard all kinds of different things. But they had the police report. They were scrolling, animating a yellow highlight marker, going over the words from the police report as NBC figured out what really happened.
Sources familiar with what unfolded in the Pelosi residence now revealing when officers responded to the high priority call, they were seemingly unaware they'd been called to the home of the Speaker of the House.
Again, I find that amazing. Third in line for the presidency, and San Francisco cops don't know that they're going to Nancy Pelosi's house. That's amazing to me, if true.
After a knock and announce, the front door was opened by Mr. Pelosi.
Okay, now this is huge. The cops knock on the door, and Paul Pelosi answers the door. And he had not yet been attacked with a hammer, apparently. And then, What did Paul Pelosi do when his rescuers, the cops, somebody had broken, a madman, nudist, hallucinogenic fried person has broken into his house at 2 o'clock in the morning. And finally, his heroes, his rescuers, the police come and he opens the front door. Does he run into their arms, say, thank you, save me. That nudist guy has got a hammer.
No. 82-year-old did not immediately declare an emergency or try to leave his home, but instead began walking several feet back into the foyer toward the assailant and away from police.
Does this make any sense? Paul Pelosi didn't go to the cops. He didn't say, I'm in trouble. Didn't say, rescue me. This guy broke into my house. He started walking towards David DePop. This is blockbuster, man. But NBC had to kill this story.
It's unclear if the 82-year-old was already injured or what his mental state was, say sources.
What his mental state was? Was he stinking fall down drunk like he was a few months ago when he was caught with a DUI? And the politicians, the prosecutor, everybody worked to cover that up?
According to court documents, when the officer asked what was going on, defendant smiled and said everything's good. But instantaneously, a struggle ensued as police clearly saw David DePap strike Paul Pelosi in the head with a hammer.
Okay, why did Paul Pelosi go to David DePap instead of having the cops protect him? And then there's more explosive stuff right at the end of this Today Show story.
After tackling the suspect, officers rushed to Mr. Pelosi, who was lying in a pool of blood.
What we do know is he brutally attacked Mr. Pelosi and attempted to kill him.
After spending several days in the ICU, Pelosi, who is recovering from a fractured skull and serious injuries to his arm and hand, is now home where Capitol Police remain on alert. Investigators have previously said Pelosi did not know DePap when the 42-year-old broke into his home. Why Pelosi didn't try to flee or tell responding officers he was in distress is unclear.
It is very unclear. Paul Pelosi's rescuers are there at the door, and he doesn't say, I'm in trouble. He doesn't try to run out of the house away from the nudist hammer guy. He doesn't say, protect me. He goes back to the hammer guy. It's hammer time.
Fear takes over. Fear freezes people.
This morning, the 82-year-old, lucky to be alive, after an intruder nearly killed him in his own home.
Law enforcement officials tell us the bottom line here is this was a terrifying situation. We still don't know exactly what unfolded between Mr. Pelosi and the suspect for the 30 minutes they were alone inside that house before police arrived. Officials who were investigating this matter would not go into further details about these new details.
They were alone together in the house for 30 minutes before the incident that was just described to you. Now, this guy's a terrific reporter for the Today Show. As I said a couple of hours ago, the Today Show has layers of editors before a story goes to air, and they approve this story. Then it airs on the East Coast. You know, they go on the air at 7 a.m., you know, Eastern and Pacific. So it aired on the East Coast, and then before it could air here on the West Coast, NBC News killed that story. And they pulled it from the Today Show website with this editor's note. The piece should not have aired because it did not meet NBC News reporting standards. So they have completely trashed one of their frontline reporters on the Today Show. Said that he didn't meet basic journalism standards with that story, even though every editor who looked at that story said, that's a great story, let's run with it, let's go. But it contradicts the narrative that Jay Inslee and Joe Biden and everybody else was trying to peddle to us a week ago. And so did Democrat Party officials, did Nancy Pelosi, did they contact NBC News and say, no, don't, we were trusting that this would turn around the midterms. You can't tell the truth. You can't handle the truth. Okay, that's your big lead this hour. Lots more to do. Okay, I'll get to those latest poll results and more on what to expect in the next couple of days because things are getting crazy as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. final half hour of our broadcast. Wait. So, Nicole, power out at the radio station? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, Andrew. Okay. Man, you sound a lot like Nicole. But the generator kicked on. We didn't lose a beat, huh?
Nope, not a single beat.
Yeah. How about our engineers there at Bonneville, Seattle?
My computer didn't even, flash at all.
We have backup battery systems so that when the power goes out, all we really lose is the lights and the maybe the internet, depending. Yeah. But the internet held on, and the board was all fine. Everything in the on-air studio was fine.
It was so dark, though, for quite a few seconds.
It worked exactly how it was supposed to. It keeps us online until the generator kicks on.
You know what else doesn't go out when the power goes out? My integrity. I have a generator that kicks on and just keeps that going, too. Okay, but yeah, there's power outages all around the region. Stormy, stormy night. Cozy. Cozy, isn't it? All right. Got a lot of stuff to get to still. So Jay Inslee, he's our governor, you know. He was on our news partners at Cairo 7 a few days ago. And he was talking about, it was on October 31st. Which is the day he gave up his emergency powers after almost 1,000 days of emergency. And Jay Inslee, once again, he said that remember a few months ago when Jay Inslee said, I am the only one who can save lives. So once again, a couple of days ago, Jay Inslee told us how many lives he saved during COVID, and he even had stats to back it up.
Let me give you a couple of statistics. We kept our death rate down because we did very smart things to listen to science, to listen to physicians, to all of us in some fashion work together to prevent the spread of this deadly disease. Had we not done that, had we followed, say, what Mississippi did, we would have had an additional 19,000 people lose their lives.
Oh, my gosh. Well, baby, why would you follow what Mississippi did? You have nothing but contempt for states like Mississippi. But compared to Mississippi, Jay Inslee saved 19,000 lives. Now, I don't know if that's the best comparison in the world. Do you have any other comparisons, Jay Inslee? Maybe last month, did you have a better comparison for us than Mississippi?
Comparing some of the fatality statistics, if we had not taken some of these actions, if we had had the same fatality rate as some of other states, just take Mississippi for an example,
what?
We would have lost an additional 19,000 lives in the state of Washington.
We're once again comparing ourselves to Mississippi? And you know what I like about this? In both of these sound bites, Jay Inslee sounds like he's just coming up with it off the top of his head. Like, I mean, if we had followed I'll say Mississippi, for example. It's like he's just off the top of his head. I'm just going to pick one out of 49 other random states. But listen to how casual he is as he just plucks Mississippi out of thin air.
A couple minutes to listen to physicians, to all of us in some fashion work together to prevent the spread of this deadly disease. Had we not done that, had we followed, say, what Mississippi did, we would have had...
Had we followed, say, not Mississippi, 19,000 lives. And that's what he does every time. He goes, he sounds so casual in this other one, too.
Comparing some of the fatality statistics, if we had not taken some of these actions, if we had had the same fatality rate as some of other states, just take Mississippi for an example.
Let's just take Mississippi. Let's toss that one out there. You know what's great about this? A few years ago, when a really incompetent person was running Seattle Department of Transportation, Scott Kubley, we were talking about, he was talking about how many lives he was saving as the director of transportation in Seattle. And this is probably 6-7 years ago when Scott Kubley came on my show. And he was able to just pull random comparisons out of thin air.
This is from your Seattle Times op-ed piece. You said people who are walking or biking represent 3% of collisions, but 50% of fatalities. And that's why you want to make these changes. If this is truly about public safety, why do you want to get more people walking and biking when that represents the vast majority or a disproportionate share of fatalities. It is clearly, if it was purely about safety, clearly people are safer if they've got a couple tons of steel wrapped around them instead of walking or biking.
And he kind of laughed at this. I'd run all the numbers. But Scott Kubley, he had numbers.
So there are 33,000 people a year that die in automobile crashes, Dory.
Mm-hmm.
In the state of Mississippi, more than 30 people die per 100,000 residents in mm-hmm. automobile crashes, which makes driving in Mississippi, you're more likely to die in an automobile crash in the state of Mississippi than you are in a murder in Detroit.
We're not in Mississippi. That's,
I'm just saying. So automobile...
I'm just saying. So this has been like the memo for a decade in local politics. You're going to make yourself look good by comparing Washington or Seattle to Mississippi. They've been doing it for years and years. And I called Kubley out when I said, we're not in Mississippi. If Jay Inslee will ever come on my show, I'll let him know that we're not in Mississippi as well. But good comparison, Jay Inslee and Scott Kubley. You really know how to rock those numbers. All right, quick timeout. We're going to cut down our favorite sound bites of the entire week. Awesome Audio is coming up next. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a dirt. And before we get out of here into the blustery afternoon, let's count down our favorite sound bites of the week.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio Clips of the Week.
First of all, at SeattleTimes.com right now, their spotlight story is Joe Kent, congressional candidate Joe Kent, wants to rewrite history of January 6th attack. And the Seattle Times, which has almost no readers in Joe Kent's district, we have a lot of listeners that go down into down the I-5 corridor and into Clark County even. But Seattle Times has no reader. But Seattle Times is obsessed because they can't stand Joe Kent. Trump endorsed him. He's an America First guy. And the picture they posted was one of Joe Kent, like, raising his fist and his face scrunched up at a speech. They say that he's a January 6th denier. I think it's fair to say his opponent is a science denier. Marie Glusenkamp Perez, she was asked at a town hall two nights ago by a woman in the audience a pretty simple yes or no question.
Do you support biological males competing in biological female sports? I think that is the...
I know the answer is no, but I can't say no because the mob will come in. What do I do?
It depends. When do they transition? What are their hormone levels? I mean, when you really look at...
What are their hormone levels?
Athletes have all different natural hormone levels. So it is a nuanced question. So
yes, you do support that?
It depends on the scenario.
Yes or no? Yes or no?
We're faced with situations where it's either a yes or no. Either the biological male competes or the biological male does not compete.
That's the woman. Very reasonable question. It's a yes or no. Do you think they should be allowed to or not? And listen to her response.
Women. And so we have to make that decision.
Yeah, I don't think you're understanding the nuance of these issues.
Yeah, that's how to win over the ladies in the... You don't understand the nuance. The answer is no, it's not fair. Everybody knows it's not fair. But she's afraid to say truth because the mob has taken over the minds and the souls of the people on the left, and they can't even speak truth. And they're all science deniers. Huh. But they're the party of science. They're all science deniers. Let's see what else we got here. Back in the 70s, Pittsburgh Steelers superstar Mean Joe Green, he did a very famous Coke commercial. He's kind of limping off the field, and a little kid comes up to him.
Mr. Fetterman.
Oh, wait, that's the wrong. Here's the original Mean.
Please, give him
up. Mr. Green?
Yeah.
You need any help?
Mm-mm.
I just want you to know, I think you're the best ever.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so this little kid, and then he gives Mean Joe Green a coaster. Nice around. That's the way it should be. One of the most famous commercials of the 70s. Well, how bizarre is this? John Fetterman, running for Senate in Pennsylvania, he's recreating, he's in a tunnel, like off a football field. He's leaning against the brick side wall, and a little kid comes up to him, just like in the Joe Green Coke commercial.
Mr. Fetterman. Mr. Fetterman.
Yeah?
You need any help?
I'm running for the U.S. Senate, kid. I need all the help I can get.
You're running for Senate?
Sure.
Where's your suit and your flag pin and your hair?
Oh, hey, kid.
I just want you to know I'd vote for you.
Hey, thanks, kid.
You want a drink?
No.
Really? You can have it.
Okay.
A bottle of pop.
So most people don't remember the Mean Joe Green commercial. It was 50 years old. But that's the Hail Mary by John Fetterwoman. Let's see. Oh, here's Debbie Wasserman Schultz getting the crowd hyped up for Joe Biden's appearance at in a high school auditorium or gym in Florida earlier this week. I've never heard a political party so fired up by their president as the Democrats are by Joe Biden.
I bet some people in here want to improve people's lives. Are you with me? Okay. Come on, people. Let's wake up. We got the president of the United States in the house. Come on now. I know you got a little more energy than I hear. Okay. Thank you very much. That's the crowd I know. Those are the people I represent. Okay. Just wanted to make sure we're still here.
Yeah, they're still here. They just don't care about Joe, your president. And then finally, barista at Starbucks. She was working too many hours.
I'm literally about to quit. Like, I don't know if I'm going to do it, but, like, I really want to. I almost walked out today, and I'm crying in the back room right now, and I almost cried on the floor. It's just, I'm a full-time student. I get scheduled for 25 hours a week, and then on weekends, they schedule me the entire day, open to close. I'm on the schedule for 8.5 hours, both Saturday and Sunday. I'm like 3.5 hours into my shift. There's so many customers, and we have 4 people on the floor all day. Only 5 people were put on the schedule, and somebody had to call out. They don't want to help us. We need a union because this can't happen. And then people are yelling at me because I don't have their orders ready. And I don't know what to do. And a customer was misgendering me tonight, like, really badly. I didn't have their order ready. And so they were just, like, talking to each other. And they're like, she's clearly incompetent. I have a full mustache and beard. What the f***? I don't get accommodations for being neurodivergent. I don't even know what to do anymore. I'm, like, at my wit's end with this job.
Work is hard. Work is really, really hard. I gotta get out of here. The John Carlin Sherry Elicker Show is coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times. Enjoy this weekend, and let's get back together Monday, high noon, election eve. See you then.
Wow. It's the end of an era.
You did a good job, buddy. Now it's time to come home.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.